Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, of course, Surreal Gerald Quinn. On this 22nd of September 2022, season 15, episode 848 of the Real Deal Podcast, approaching what 850 in a couple of weeks. I hope everybody out there is having a great week. We are near the weekend, thank God. Starting to get not chilly yet. It was a little humid in the DMV, but anyway. We're going to get right to it. I'm rolling solo tonight. We will not be joined by Robert Sapp. He'll be back next week. But guess what? In his honor, this podcast is going to be rated B for Bills. There's going to be a lot of Bills. Okay, up in this podcast, as the Buffalo Bills are just running roughshod through the NFL right now, even through two games. And that's going to be where we begin with our themes. This is what I did at Alabama. Talk more about that. And, of course, super team. Do we have a super team in the making in terms of the Buffalo Bills? So I'm going to introduce a new segment to it, to the game, to the podcast. But you know what? We're going to save this segment. We're actually going to skip this segment because Robert Sapp is not here. And we can't do a Buffalo Bills segment without Robert Sapp. So put a pause on this segment, but we'll give you a little preview. We're going to do a Bills segment every podcast. This team has a chance to be a special team. I think, along with Robert Sapp, thinks that they can win 15 games, maybe even more. They could be a dominant team in the mold of the 85 Bears, in the mold of, say, the 84 49ers, a team like that. I really believe that this team has that type of potential. But we'll save that segment for next week. Game of the week. Without question, this is the game of the week, an early candidate for game of the year. And I guarantee you, when we look back at the 2022 season, this will be a top five game of the year. This was a spent Miami, of course, takeout upset the Baltimore Ravens in Baltimore 42-38. This was a wild game. You're talking about Miami putting up 35 second half points, 28 in the fourth quarter. They outscored Baltimore 35-10 in the second half, despite the fact that Baltimore had 155 yards rushing, and despite the fact that both quarterbacks, Lamar Jackson was spectacular, both quarterbacks, what makes a classic game, especially regular season game, is when both quarterbacks are operating at an optimum level. Both these quarterbacks were off the charts. I mean, just making play after play. Tua had the absolute game of his life, a game that maybe changes the direction of his career. If Tua goes on to become an all-pro franchise caliber quarterback, we're going to look back at this game as being the one that started it for him. He was spectacular, well over 400 yards passing. He threw for six touchdowns, and, of course, he led the charge in that great fourth quarter as Miami just completely shocked the Baltimore Ravens. Listen, here's what I'll say about the Ravens, and I saw this with a couple franchises in the last 5 years. When you lose the core of who you are, it is tough to be at a championship level. And what I mean by that is the Ravens for years. For years have been known as a defensive first, running game team second, running game second type team. That's how they build their reputation. Defense, running game. Yes, now they still have the running game with Lamar Jackson when the backs are healthy, and they had 155 yards rushing in this game. That defense scares no one anymore. Teams used to be defeated before they stepped on the field playing the Ravens defense. But, you know, the Ray Lewis, Ed Reed days, those are long gone. Long gone. Like, that defense scares no one. When I mean no one, it scares no one. What Miami did to them in that second half was, I mean, they went like, I mean, they just went, they just cut them up. I mean, they cut, I mean, I can't take Baltimore serious as a Super Bowl contender with that defense. You just can't, especially in the AFC. You're talking about, you're talking about being in a conference with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Justin Herbert. Like, there's no, like, you know, Russell Wilson, like, there's no way. The AFC is too loaded for me to take Baltimore seriously as a Super Bowl contender. I think they will still win that division just off sheer talent and Lamar, you know, if he stays healthy. But I that Baltimore defense is no longer it's just not the same. It's just not. But despite that, the story of this game was about Miami and the potential of just a offense that can just scare anybody in the league. Miami on any given Sunday can beat anybody. They have talent up and down the board on both sides of the ball. I don't know how you defend them. Like Tyreek Hill to me is the best the best deep threat since Randy Moss. Not as good as Moss because Moss was 6'4" and could jump out 40 inch plus vertical, but he takes the top off any defense at any time. And it doesn't have to be just straight go routes. We're talking about slants. He can take reverses. Like you can get the ball in his head, in his hands in a plethora of ways and crossers, things of that nature. And again, he makes you look like you had a blown coverage. One of those catches was a blown coverage. The other ones were not blown coverages. It was just like he's just the fastest player in the league. He just runs past everybody, despite the fact that you know what's coming as far as what people wanting the quarterback wanting to go deep to get to Tyreek Hill. It doesn't matter. He takes the top off any defense. I don't care how far back you play your safeties. Again, you hit them, you can run crossers, slant patterns, things of that nature. And the thing about it, and in this game, remember, he gets nicked up a little bit. You think he might be done. He wasn't, he had, I think at one point he had like 3 catches for 50 yards. Next thing you know, he is like 5-6 catches for 180 yards. It can happen so fast with him. And how do you cover him and Jalen Waddle? Like, it's impossible. It's impossible. Because Jalen Waddle, that means you have to play Jalen Waddle one-on-one and he's going to destroy you. Like Jalen Waddle is going to be an all pro caliber top young receiver. He already is one of the top young receivers. I would put him probably third behind Chase and Jefferson. But listen, Miami is talented. They're going to be in the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs. Looking forward to the game this week when they play Buffalo. But that was a spectacular performance by Miami in the second half, in particular the fourth quarter. And again, that Baltimore defense just doesn't scare anybody anymore. They just don't. Games of note, Tampa, New Orleans. Listen, no surprise with the result here, 20-10 Tampa Bay. I'd be a little concerned about the Tampa Bay offense right now, just a little bit. They haven't played well the first couple weeks. New Orleans is a legit top defense. And let's be honest, Dennis Allen has Tom Brady's number. I mean, New Orleans for the game had Tampa Bay had 260 yards for the game. And the only reason Tampa Bay won this game because Jameis Winston was Jameis Winston. 3 turnovers and New Orleans couldn't protect them. They had 6 sacks. And, of course, this game was blown open late in the fourth quarter. Much closer game than 20. It was even much closer than 20-10. I mean, this was a 3-3 game. New Orleans was up in this game 3-0, and it was tied for 3-3 for most of the game before Tampa got the first touchdown. New Orleans is going to lose a lot of these games like this. The defense plays great for 3.5 quarters, and then one big play just, shatters the game for them because their offense is just, non-existent. James Winston is not – is he a starter quarterback? Probably. But, again, he's not a guy you cannot win with a quarterback that's turnover prone. It's just not going to happen in the NFL. Like, the margin of error is too small. The talent is too balanced. Little tussle. Again, no surprise. These two teams hate each other. Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore hate each other. But Mike Evans is a dumbass move on his part. You can't come off the bench to come at Marshawn Lattimore the way he did. It was stupid. He got suspended. Now he's suspended for the Green Bay game. That could be the difference between home field advantage or a home playoff game. You never know. Even though it's early in September, still, these games are big when it comes to seeding and things of that nature. Just dumb on his part. These two teams hate each other. But again, Dennis Allen, the head coach, you know, who's the defensive guy for New Orleans, continues to baffle Tom Brady. Brady is on the sideline snapping, throwing the iPad and what have you. They definitely are in Brady's head and just have a hold, a complete hold of that offense. Remember, New Orleans only, Tampa Bay only scored 13 points in this game. They had a pick six. They had a pick six that was the other touchdown they had. New Orleans just couldn't score. That's all there is to it. So, again, no surprise for this game in terms of the result. Philadelphia, this game was over at halftime. Philadelphia just dominated this game from start to finish, 486 yards total. It was the Jalen Hurts, you know, show. He accounted. He threw the ball well, 26 to 31 for 333. Philly has played well through the first two games, but let's keep in mind they've beaten Detroit and Minnesota. So right now they're a class of the division based on the fact that Cooper Rush is the Dallas quarterback. But and Philly has improved. A.J. Brown, the defense is slightly improved. They did well with the draft. And most importantly, they're in the heart of the division. I'm not buying the Giants at all. At all. Not buying the Giants. Like the Giants, no, I'm sorry. They are probably one of the worst 2-0 teams you'll see. So I'm not buying them. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Philadelphia. They should be 3-0 as they will be traveling to Washington for the Commanders. So they should be 3-0. And they should be 3-0 once come the end of this week. But again, Jalen Hurts has been the key to this first couple of games for Philadelphia. We know he's the key to their season. Am I still bought in on am I all in on Hurts? Not quite yet. We'll see as teams adjust to him, as when teams really keen in on their running game. Listen, again, if you're Philadelphia, you're playing it right. You are a running football team. Use that to exploit some of your, to do some of the play action stuff. Get Hurts out in space. Let Hurts move. You know, we know he's not a pocket quarterback. He's not a pure pocket quarterback right now, and that's part of his game that still needs to develop. But he can move in the pocket. He can make plays outside the pocket. And, of course, we know he is a tremendous guy, is a tremendous runner. So I completely agree with how they're utilizing him. But at some point, as you know, weeks go on and the season goes on, teams will adjust and force him to make plays within the pocket. Cincinnati and Dallas. Cincinnati has some serious issues. They lose 20-17 with both Dak Prescott. The same, you know, same game, different game, same. Same song for same song for Cincinnati. Joe, they cannot keep Joe Burrow upright. Six sacks. He's been sacked 10 times in two games. This was a game that was 17-3 that Dallas almost let slip away. Cooper Rush wasn't spectacular. He did enough. Didn't make a big mistake. Again, Cincinnati. When me and Sapp had spoke, you know, about this last week. Like if you can't block for your franchise quarterback, then you don't have a team. Like it doesn't matter about their talent. It doesn't matter the weapons. They can't block. It's just as simple. That's it. They can't block. And they think about this. They've lost two games to Mitch Trubisky and Cooper Rush. Think about that for a second. So I know Joe Burrow is downplaying the 0-2 start, which he should. Especially in public, in front of the media, you got 15 games left. You can't panic, but they have some major issues, and it goes beyond just, it's not a Super Bowl hangover. They just have some, again, they have issues with protection that seemingly not getting better at all. Nice win for Dallas, but look, no, I don't, you know, Dallas does it, like that offense is not very good. Defense is decent, but we've spoken about how we feel about Dallas. Like they're not a threat to do anything this year, but though they will still be in contention for that division until Prescott gets back. Who won the week? Had to be Tua Tagovailoa. Again, when you throw for well over 400 yards, you come back a 21-point comeback on the road against a team that some people consider to be a contender to get to the Super Bowl, and the class of the division. You deserve to win the week for the season. Tua he leads the NFL in passing yards, and he has 7 touchdowns. And again, the one thing, now again, I'm not going to compare him to Patrick Mahomes as far as accuracy like Tyreek Hill did, but he is a very accurate quarterback. Like his ball placement skills are spectacular. Like he puts the ball right on the receiver. That, and again, we saw that at Alabama. That's something you can't teach. You cannot teach accuracy. And that will make up for a lack of height, like similar to Drew Brees. That was one. That's the thing that kept Drew Brees in the league for so long at a high level. That he was one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league for the time that over the course of his Hall of Fame career. So, Tua wins the week with a just spectacular performance on the road, overcoming a couple of interceptions, 6 touchdowns and 6 touchdowns, and we'll see what happens as he faces, you know, the acid test playing the best team in football right now in terms of the Buffalo Bills. Biggest disappointment has to be the Indianapolis Colts. Indianapolis Colts get shut out by Jacksonville, 24-0. They are now 0-1-1, could easily be 0-2. How Indianapolis only gets 218 total yards against Jacksonville is beyond me. I watched Jacksonville against Washington week 1. The defense is like, you can move the ball against that defense. Like that defense is not very good. But for whatever reason, Jacksonville has owned Indianapolis, especially at home. Remember, they put them out the playoffs last year in the last game of the season and picked up where they left off. Matt Ryan, non-factor. The running game was a non-factor. Again, Indianapolis should be embarrassed to be 0-1-1 right now. There's no way there's no way in the world you should ever be shut out by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I don't know. Indianapolis is, I mean, maybe they're gonna be one of these teams where, you know, we thought that they could make some noise. Who knows? They're 0-1-1 in a bad division. The division is bad, so nobody's running away from that because Tennessee is down this year as well. And we know Jacksonville isn't any good, and we know Houston isn't any good. So Indianapolis probably still, with all that being said, they probably still will win that division, but man, they look bad. They've looked awful these first 2 weeks. I mean, god awful against bad football teams. I said they should be easily 2-0. Easily. They played Houston and Jacksonville. You know, they allowed Houston to tie them at home, and they allowed Jacksonville to shut them out. So they have to get some things figured out. Again, you are not counting on Matt Ryan to be 2016-17 Matt Ryan. Those days are done. Everything's gonna be predicated off the running game and what have you. So if they can't run the football, they have no chance, none, of doing anything, let alone contending. We move on to, I will fill in for Rob Sapp. So the 49ers were able to take apart the Seahawks 27-7. We saw, unfortunately, at the expense of one Trey Lance who broke his ankle. He's done for the season. But no need to fear because Jimmy G is here. And listen, of course, you don't want to see anybody get hurt. I don't have any, you know, I don't root for San Francisco and don't root against them. So, I don't have any skin in the game from that standpoint as a football fan. But let's be honest, if we want to just keep it a buck, this was the best possible scenario for everybody, you know, to be perfectly honest with you. You have a situation where Jimmy G clearly is a better quarterback right now than Trey Lance. Number one, Jimmy G can, if he plays at a high level, can get paid in offseason. San Francisco, I think, because no one is running away with the NFC, is a legit Super Bowl contender with that defense and the running game and all the experience they have. We know what Jimmy G and Shanahan have done together versus apart. We know, and Trey Lance is not ready to play not ready to be a starting quarterback in the NFL right now. Okay? He can sit, rehab, learn another year behind Jimmy G. Best possible scenario to happen all around. And most importantly, there's no split in the locker room. Now you don't have to worry about guys, questioning the coach. Hey, man, you know, we 0-2 or whatever. Jimmy, you sure? You sure you don't have Jimmy G? You sure? We 1-3 or 2-4. That's all going by the wayside. Like, that's it. Now, they better go out there and get a reliable backup because Jimmy G is also injury prone. Not so much like season-ending injury prone, but, you know, he has some little Anthony Davis in him as far as these knick-knack injuries where he's out a couple games and not quite the same for about a month. So they better get somebody, a decent, reliable backup that kind of knows their system. You're not banking on Jimmy G to go through 15 straight games healthy, okay, moving forward. But this is absolutely the best possible scenario, to be honest with you, for San Francisco. And I do think that they are legit Super Bowl contender, because no one's running away with the NFC. There's no dominant team in the NFC. Even Tampa Bay is not a dominant team. They're very good. You know, Green Bay rebounded this week, but then, you know, we know what issues they have with the receiving, with the receiving core. So, yes, I think San Francisco is a contender, and Jimmy G definitely, is their best quarterback, and they will play well with him under center. Stock up, stock down, stock down, stock up. Of course, Miami, that was a big time win. They're 2-0. They will have the asset test this week playing the Buffalo Bills, a team that has absolutely owned them. The running game, you had at least 10 teams rush for over 100 yards. Only a couple teams lost. Baltimore lost, but for the most part, if you ran the football in week two, your team won the game. So, again, we talk about, you know, all the weapons on the outside and high scoring and things like that nature. By the way, this season so far, these games have not been really high scoring, to be honest with you. I know, you know, you had the wild game with Miami and Baltimore, but if you look across the league, there have been a number of low scoring games. So, again, you got to be able to run the football. You have to. You have to be able, especially offensive line. We talked about this last week with Sapp. Offensive line play is just not good right now. There are a number of shaky offensive lines. You have to protect. And that's one thing Tampa Bay has done through the first course of the first couple of games. They ran the ball, even when they haven't gained a lot of yards, but they ran the ball enough to keep these defensive lines off Brady's ass. We saw it with Green Bay on Sunday night. Hey, we're going to run the ball. They got Jenkins back, the tackle. And we'll dare you to stop it. And Chicago, of course, had no answer for it as they ran for well over 200 yards in that game. The running game will never, never get old. It will never get old running the football. Never. So that I would say stock up is the running game. Stock down, the Vegas Raiders. I don't know how in the world they lost the game to the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona Cardinals are not well coached right now. Kyler Murray basically beat them by himself. There's no way that game shouldn't have been 31-10. They were up 20-0 at home. You're at home against an Arizona team that's reeling, that just frankly is not well coached. They're just not. There's no offensive foundation or plan in place for Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray was out there playing like street basketball, street football out there. And I'm not blaming him. He has no choice. Has no choice. Clearly, there's no strategy without DeAndre Hopkins. Clearly, you had the entire offseason, the majority of the offseason, knowing that he was going to be suspended for the first, six games. So there's no plan in place. Is, hey, Kyler, do you? And that's not a plan that's going to work. That's not going to have any sustainable success over the course of a 17-game NFL season. Arizona was fortunate to win that game, but that shows you where Vegas is at. Vegas is they're going to be one of the more inconsistent teams in the league. One quarter, they're going to look great. The next quarter, they're going to look like the worst team in the league. That's just Vegas. They have a lot of talent, but they just don't have – they don't possess from play to play, quarter to quarter, the necessary level of consistency to be taken seriously. They don't. Baltimore, again, we talked earlier about them. The defense is putrid. I just don't respect that defense in a big spot. Now, against bad teams, sure, their defense will make plays, but against teams with any type of weapons, and again, the AFC is loaded with them, I don't trust Baltimore's defense in a big spot to stop a major offensive team. We look at week three. There are some heavyweight matchups. Bills, Dolphins. I wonder what the Sapp text where it will be like with Robert Sapp and his brother. His brother, of course, is a lifelong Bill Dolphins fan. Of course, we know what Robert Sapp is in terms of the Buffalo Bills, one of the leading members of the Bills Mafia. Listen, Sapp is real is concerned about has expressed how much he concerned he is about this team. He really has, and even more so than me. And I thought they would make the playoffs, but Sapp is terrified of Tyreek Hill. He just is. I think Buffalo will win this game because they are more they're just more consistent, and they are a couple years ahead of Miami as far as their process. But Miami's scary. They are scary offensively. They can score in a heartbeat. They have some nice players on defense. The thing about Buffalo right now that's separating them from everybody else in the league, and me and Sapp talked about this, is physicality. You play Buffalo, you feel it. I mean, you feel it. Like, and talking about Buffalo, how dominant they've been. They've outscored their opponents 72-17. They rank third in total offense, second in total defense. So they just and all the pieces fit. So they are an absolute well-oiled machine right now. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and that's like I said, the Tennessee game, they were supposed to beat the hell out of Tennessee, and they absolutely did. They absolutely did. Packers-Bucks game, I don't have a great feel on this game, and neither do the bettors, because the line is one. The Bucks are basically – it's basically a pick-em. The game is at Tampa Bay. Now, Aaron Rodgers has been horrible against the Bucks over the course of his career. He's 1-3. His worst QBR, touchdown-interception ratio. He's thrown multiple pick-sixes against Tampa Bay over the course of his career. That defensive front has always bothered him. The coverages have bothered him, particularly last year. They should have won the NFC Championship a couple years ago. That game they should have won. Like that was just embarrassing. We know what happened with LaFleur not taking the ball, basically taking the ball out of Rodgers' hands, and they never got it back. But I don't know. I think Tampa probably wins a close game, because I'm still not sold on the Green Bay receivers. Tampa Bay has a spectacular secondary. I think they'll be able to contain the Green Bay run. You can make like 10. Green Bay's defense has not played as up to the level that I thought that they were going to play. Teams have been able to move the ball against Green Bay. We'll see. How they match up against a Tampa Bay offense that's not playing well right now. This game, anytime you have two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, it's a special game with Brady and Rodgers, the two definitive quarterbacks of this generation of the last, probably last decade. It's not that often they meet. I think this is the fifth time they've met. I think Brady's 3-1 against Rodgers. But these guys are, who knows? This might be the last time they ever meet. Brady's 45, Rodgers 38. Rodgers already said he's not playing till 45. But probably won't be the last time to meet. I think they'll probably meet in the playoffs more than likely. But again, this is a huge game in September. We can talk about home field advantage. Packers need home field advantage. Even though it hasn't guaranteed anything, they absolutely need home field advantage to get to the Super Bowl. Tampa Bay, not so much. We've seen them win on the road. So again, a litmus test, early litmus test in the AFC for pole position with home field, and we're seeing how these teams match up. Now again, come December, we know the NFL changes every. There are four to five twists and turns in every NFL season, so these two teams might look completely different come November and December and January. But regardless of that, big time game, certainly looking forward to it. A couple things before I get to Roger Federer. I'm gonna leave the Udoka situation alone right now because I need more details on that. I need more. I haven't. We know he could be possibly facing suspension for a year, having a consensual affair with a team employee, but it's more to it than that. Just think of you're talking about suspending one of the better coaches in the league that took a team to the finals last year. It has to be more than that. So I'm gonna hold that off till next week when that picture becomes more clear. As far as Robert Sarver, listen, money talks, sponsorship talk, period. What happened with that is the sponsorship said, listen, get him the fuck up out of here, period. and the NBA said, "Hey, Robert, sponsors, like, what, like the NBA owners basically said, hey, you gotta go, man. That's it. Don't make us publicly vote you out. So take the $2.2 billion and keep it moving. No one, and let's not make this a story. This is actually the best possible case. This is actually the best possible thing that can happen in the NBA from that standpoint. Because now, once he sells the team, and he says he's going to sell the Mercury, and he says he's going to sell the Suns, no one will be talking about this shit in October around training camp. No one. It will not be a story. So it will not be a black cloud hanging over the NBA's head for the entire season. No one will give a shit about Robert Sarver after, like, in about two to three weeks when the NBA season starts. Okay, if you're Robert Sarver, this is a easy move. This is, it kind of reminds me of Irvin Burrell in the Wire season 5. Don't go out kicking and screaming. Go out, take your losses, take your fire, take your L, whatever. You'll be playing golf and making just as much money. And just like Irvin Burrell did in season 5, Robert Sarver says, "Hey, I'll take the $2 billion and keep it moving." Period. Now, as far as cancel culture and unforgiving culture and all that bullshit, you can miss me with that. Nobody cares. I love how people like try to bring up God after they had done some shit that gets them caught up. I believe in forgiveness. Yeah, sure. Okay, Robert, enough already with that. But anyway, he's going to be, this is the best possible, best case scenario for the NBA, for everybody involved. The player's not going to have to answer questions about it. And you don't have this nutcase running a franchise who had no business owning a team after what the reports that we read over the last year or so. So this is if you're in the NBA, you have to be happy about this. This is all there is to it. And the bottom line is the sponsorship said, hey, get him the fuck up out of there. You owners, get him the fuck up out of here before we start cutting your sponsors, before we start cutting your money. That's exactly what happened. Without even knowing the details, I'm telling you what happened. Because when you go from vehemently saying, I'm not going to sell the team, to, hey, by the way, yeah, I think I'm going to sell both, not only the Suns, but the Mercury. That's sponsorship. The owners have told you, you are going to sell the team, or we're going to vote you out because these sponsors have started pulling out. That's exactly what happened with that situation. So the NBA is better off for it. The Phoenix Suns are better off for it. The Mercury, everybody wins. Even Robert Sarver wins. He's going to get $2 billion. So here you go with that. I'm not going to say sad news, because all good things come to an end. Roger Federer, of course, retired last week at the age of 41. He's had a litany of injuries the past 2 to 3 years, since the 2020 U.S. Open, or 2020 U.S. Open. He hasn't been the same player since he lost that just dramatic Wimbledon championship, just the torturous Wimbledon final against Novak Djokovic, where he was up, had two match points on his serve. That match hurt me, because I can't stand Djokovic, and I've been a Federer guy for the bad part of his career, a huge Federer fan. But that was his last shot at winning another Grand Slam. He made it to the semifinals of a couple more, but for the most part, that was his last best shot. He retires at the age of 41 with 20 Grand Slams. And we can go back and forth and back and forth with the GOAT conversation with Nadal, Federer, and Djokovic. There are three GOATs in tennis. Those three are heads and shoulders above everybody. It's not even close. I can make a case for any one of the three. When he was at his pinnacle, his peak, apex, Roger Federer was the greatest tennis player of all time. Like, the best version of Roger Federer was better than any version of any tennis player that's ever lived, because you had the guy that can play on all surfaces. Think about this, right? He won 5 straight U.S. Opens and 5 straight Wimbledons, okay? And within the same time span. The Wimbledons were from 2003 to 2007. The U.S. Opens were from 2004 to 2008. So basically, basically to win five straight Grand Slams on the same surface, on different surfaces, is not, it will never, that is the most impressive to me accomplishment that any tennis player has ever had. Well, maybe with the quite exception of when Borg was winning the French Open. Out the Borg French Open Wimbledon was ridiculous too. I think that was that has to be right there next to it. But it is virtually impossible to do that. To win five straight Grand Slams on two different surfaces is unheard of. And to me, again, when he wasn't just a tennis player. He was like playing with him. Watching him play tennis was like an artist. He's an artist out there with the creativity, the shot making, the grit, the grace, how he moved. It was so fluid. And again, he just made the game look easy. And the thing about it is he always evolved. Like he would change up. He changed coaches. He would change styles. He would do, remember the saber. And again, the last time he really changed his style, Nadal couldn't beat him. You look at his record against Nadal the last like 10 matches. I think he's like 8-1 against Nadal in his last 9 matches, or 9-1. Like he owned Nadal at the end of his career. At the end of his career, including beating him at Wimbledon in 2019, which was a classic match in 4 sets. So certainly we'll miss. Certainly you hate to see him go out because of his injury. But again, 41 is 41. Again, there's no player I've ever enjoyed watching play tennis more than Roger Federer. Yeah, this is all there is to it. One of the great tennis players, one of the great, frankly, athletes of all time. To be honest with you, he's in that conversation as well. He's gone. He's done at the age of 41. I suppose he's playing in this doubles event with Rafael Nadal. They are, of course, very close friends. Nadal, Djokovic and Federer don't get along. Nadal and Federer, you know, are extremely close in terms of the respect factor that they've had with their rivalry. So it makes sense that they would play that his finals doubles match. His doubles match would be with Nadal. They've had, maybe the greatest match of all time in 2008 Wimbledon, which again that was just an insane match to watch with the tie breaks and you know that final fifth set and Nadal finally breaking through and beating Federer at Wimbledon, which really you know elevated Nadal his status. But this is a guy that, again, Federer, this guy, 31, think about it, 31, he's kind of like Jack Nicklaus in golf, always was contending, always was in the mix, always. He gets off to the 7-0 start in major finals, 10-1 in his first 11 finals, had the classic match that really was the pass the torch match against Pete Sampras in 2001 at Wimbledon when, you know, we didn't really know who he was at that time. We knew he was talented, but he was inconsistent, and that match changed the course of his career. It still, you know, would take him a couple of years to win a Grand Slam, but when he started winning them, he didn't stop for a while. Like, that period from 2003 to, say, 2010 was as dominant of a stretch of tennis that we've ever seen, period. So, again, nothing lasts forever. 41 years old, is 41 is 41. But he certainly will be missed as one of the GOATs in the history of tennis. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. As always, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel. Go to, you know, at AMC Lifestyle for all calculated measures and check out gear, hats, shirts, and what have you from my man Adrian McDonald. Have a great, great Thursday and enjoy your football weekend. We will see you next time.